I've just used the recording, yeah. Another great start to the podcast. I've had 3, 2, 1. Action! Welcome to the Action Studios podcast. We're here in Hackney Wick.
All right, mate, calm down.
At Urchin Studios.
We're not American. It's Monday morning. Easy with the enthusiasm, please.
It's not that early. I've already clipped just the mic as well by clipping. Clippity clapping. I'm not in the right place. But anyway, it doesn't matter. We're here. We're happy.
Yeah, I'm
happy. Fellows.
You're clapping.
How's your week been? I think you've been away. You've been cheating on us.
I went to a proper recording studio.
Yes. Finally.
No, it was great. I went to...
Did they have a proper drummer there as well?
Had to use me.
Yeah.
See what I did there?
I think you should... you should do the podcast with your whole drum kit here so that you can do... Yeah, exactly.
I was at Angelic Recording Studios.
Which is a residential. Yeah. In, where is it?
It's in... Oh,
last week you didn't know. Hopefully you know now.
It's in Northampton.
Northampton.
You know, it's interesting when you go to other studios, there really is no such thing as a perfect studio, apart from us, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Obviously, yeah.
You know, all studios have obviously different price points and different mm-hmm. pluses and like different minuses. And
yeah.
And often, I guess, owning a recording studio and working here so much, and it's a bit like going to other studios is a bit like going on holiday. I tend to only see the great things first.
Yeah.
You know, unless it's an absolute shit pit.
Is that like sort of stuff we don't have or just general points?
So, so Angelic is out in, I mean, it couldn't be more different to Urchin in terms of its location. It's in looks like an old farm.
Mm-hmm.
It's a series of like barns that have been converted into a studio and residential. It was set up by a guy called Toby Smith, who very tragically died, actually, very young, I think 2017, but he was one of the founding members of Jamiroquai.
Okay, yeah.
And set the studio up.
Yeah.
And it's just got gear,
mm-hmm.
like all the gear. Yeah, I mean, everything you kind of expect from like a super kind of posh studio, like, you know, 1073, 770, you know.
Neve or SSL console?
A massive SSL console.
Massive SSL, yeah.
Which is great for putting laptops on.
Yeah. That's such a solid construction, you know. I think all of the knobs are mostly an even height, which is great. You know, really gives you that support. Ventilation.
Apart from
the fact that the fucking console's hot.
Man, it was so hot and the fucking aircon broke.
Oh.
And it was, you know, fortunately it was winter, but it did get a bit.
Yeah.
Like, God, if this is summer, we'd all be dying.
They should have had like just a little thing with some hot coals on so you could have just sauned it up.
So
it's really good for the desk actually.
A little plunge pool. Yeah, water.
Yeah.
It loves
yeah.
fluids.
Yeah.
Desks.
They love it. Yeah, moisture, humidity, really good for consoles.
But it was great. I had a really great time.
Mm-hmm.
I can't unfortunately say who I was working with.
Secret project.
Secret project. But when it's out, I'll obviously be talking
shouting.
About it and obviously taking all the credit.
Yeah, exactly. Check out the most important part of this track.
But, you know, it was really dreamy in that, like, It was a perfect session. Really great people, really mm-hmm. great music,
yeah.
really great space.
Mm.
Obviously not as good as us.
No.
But
not as close to your house.
Not as close to my house. Yeah, it was a sort of a saver. But the thing I like, Dan, about going other places
mm-hmm.
is learning stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
So they did a few production moves.
Uh-huh.
I'm like, why haven't I? I've been a musician now for like 30 years. Why have I never thought of that?
Yeah.
It's so obvious.
Oh, who was engineering? You're going to... Somebody.
Yeah, I can actually.
Yeah.
It was a really good engineer called Amy Sargent, who knows you.
Oh, yeah, I know Amy.
She came to the old...
Shout out, Amy. Yeah.
Apparently, she came to the old Urchin.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I see her around at stuff and... Been keeping an eye on you, you know.
Not in a weird way.
No, not in a weird way.
Yeah, she's a great engineer. I mean, it was sounding really good.
I wish she's that.
The
amazing.
Thing I've never done, why have I never done this? Mm. This is, I've never pitch shifted drums down.
Oh, okay.
I very sped them, which is, I think is a slightly different thing. A
little bit, yeah.
I always, I'm not going to throw Avid under the bus here, but the pitch shifter on that you get as part of Pro Tools sounds very artifacty to me.
I cannot disagree with you more.
Oh my God! I don't like it.
Here's what you do. You set it on polyphonic.
Yeah.
Because that's the only one that... Do you mean the clip-based pitch shifter?
No.
Or are you talking about the rendering one?
The rendering one in audio. Oh, okay. In audio files. No, audio
that, that's for granddads.
It doesn't sound good, does it? It's for granddads.
Well, the way that I do it, this is a teaching moment.
Teach me, Tad.
Set it to polyphonic in the channel.
Yeah.
And then obviously select whatever you're doing, right click it. If it's on the polyphonic mode, you'll have a pitch shift option there.
Yeah.
And then you can just elastically in real time, you don't have to render it. That you can then use that to pitch shift.
Have you been doing that?
Yeah. I have done that before. Yeah.
My drums sound so good when you record them?
Yeah, on drums, not lately, but it's like, I was working with a producer the other day who sort of wasn't that familiar with Melodyne.
Okay.
And they...
What does he, she use then?
Just doing it by ear, which is how you did it.
Singing it?
In the old days. No, when you had a great take, just this note's just a little bit flat. They're just in the old days, the old school way of doing it is you just pitch shift the region a little bit.
That reminds me. I want to talk about auto tuning and pitch shifting.
Okay. This might be the pitch changing episode.
It might be. But go on.
Okay.
Go on.
Anyway. So do use the polyphonic one. That's the quick and dirty one, which I don't generally have a problem with.
I have not used. Why have I not used it?
I don't know.
But would you set it on poly? Yeah. No. If it was on drums, you wouldn't set it to polyphonic.
Well, you have to set it. I'm pretty sure polyphonic's the only one that will do pitch shifting. Everything else is elastic. Time stretching stuff.
Audio.
Which again, I find works really well, actually.
That I've used a lot.
If you are confident that it's going to work and it's sounding good, then you change the algorithm to X-Form.
Yeah.
And then that will render it on the highest quality pitch shifter. I think there might even be a new algorithm in Pro Tools.
I've got to do, why have I been using Pitch 2 then?
I don't know. I mean, talking about doing things. Oh, yeah. Oh, pitch 2 is awful.
That's what I mean.
Yeah, it's horrible.
Fucking grim.
Yeah.
So don't do that.
I think I can say with a lot of confidence, I've never got pitch 2 to do anything that I liked, except when something horrible and crunchy and weird happens by accident.
Yeah.
And I've gone like, that's cool. But that wasn't what I meant. That's absolutely not what I meant. But this hideous bastardization of what I'm doing. You just moved further away, by the way.
Have I?
You might not even be on camera.
Oh, I don't care.
Screw it.
I don't care. Yeah.
But go on. So pitch shifting drums.
Yeah, they just used the Waves one.
Yeah.
They were, and the producer was like, this is the best sounding pitch shifter I've ever used.
Okay.
And just put the drums down by like one, I think it was just a tone.
Okay.
And it was just like, oh yeah.
All right.
That's fucking great. Apparently Chad Blake does it all the time.
Okay.
Everyone's doing it. Everyone's
pitch shifting their drums.
Apart from me, Dan.
Yeah. Well, it might be your sound might be using that horrible pitch 2 plugin.
That's why everything.
Stick with it, mate, once you get it to work.
That's why everything that I do just sounds terrible.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Matt's sample pack's out.
Oh, yeah.
Speaking of terrible. No,
great link, Dan.
Yeah. Well, it's your launch day, so we have to
do this.
What do the Americans call it? Roast you.
Okay, you can roast me.
Yeah, that was it.
That was it. Oh, that was it.
Yeah.
Okay, it's out today. I'm quite actually sort of. I don't know what expectations I have for this. However, I just put it live, and posted it on Insta, and I've had 7 orders already. Mm. So it's like... Ugh.
Is that including the two pre-orders you had?
No, that's seven new ones in like 15 minutes. So that's quite nice.
Amazing.
So if you want just a really great loop pack, producers...
Yeah, your songs without all the shit all over them.
Without the...
Yeah.
Without that on it. Then this...
That's a different sample pack. We're doing that one next.
It's really sweet. What I was going to talk about is, have you seen, Dan, the We Are The World documentary?
I definitely haven't watched it start to finish. I'm so sure I've seen some clips.
It's really good.
Thanks.
It's good because the song is kind of cheesy and cloying.
Yeah.
But it's good from a producer, if you're interested in like music and the way in which music is recorded.
Uh-huh.
It's pretty amazing.
Right.
In the, I mean, the firstly, just the logistics of getting so many, I mean, like literally everyone is in it.
Mm.
Like from like Dylan's in it.
Yeah.
Like Ray Charles. For anyone who doesn't know, it was a song, it was sort of the Americans' answer to Live Aid.
Yeah.
And they just did it like bigger and better,
mm.
basically. And like the
with bigger egos as well, probably.
Well, yeah, this is the thing, right? So there's just like, I mean, it kind of, in terms of like who was big in 1985, it's sort of everyone.
Right.
It's kind of mental, just the, but the interesting thing is that two things are interesting. How much of a boss Quincy Jones is.
Right. He's producing it.
He's producing it.
Yeah, okay.
And just the way in which he negotiated the what could have been problems.
Yeah.
It was just so genius, and how calm and just authoritative, and his communication and just the way that he holds the room.
Yeah.
And the idea that he had, like the original idea was, oh, we've got this song, so we'll just get like everybody like just does it line by line in a booth. And he's like, no. They should all be,
okay.
Just, you know, right, you know, Michael, it's your go, sing your line.
And okay, they said, yeah.
No, we're going to get everybody in a circle.
Right.
And we do passes. And
not, okay.
And not only...
So we need 12 U87s.
Well, yeah, it's I think they're C12s.
Okay. So,
but they're all sharing the mic. And,
oh, you're sharing the mic, isn't it?
Well, there's like, it seems that like there's like five sort of C12s around the room.
Okay.
And they all sort of, you know, jump in like my bad.
Yeah, that's the AKG C12.
But I think just the psychology of that is that like, not only would it save time,
mm-hmm.
but everyone is facing everyone else.
Yeah.
So everyone's just got to bring their A game, because you're literally, I find that whenever I've done, I think that, I've done Jules Holland a few times,
uh-huh.
and there's something in, you're all in a circle facing each other.
Yeah.
Which is why I think there's been a lot of, over the years, there's been a lot of like really legendary Jules Holland performances.
Mm-hmm.
It's like when musicians are faced with other musicians, it's like, oh, fuck, you really care.
The audience is our peers.
Yes. And so that was really interesting. Also, what was really interesting is just, they show the rehearsal, you know, all them doing takes.
Mm.
And without throwing any artists under the bus, just to say, some artists are better than others, right?
In the rehearsal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, you know, you've got like fucking, like people like Stevie, who are just like, and Michael Jackson, who was just like pros.
Were they on the same mic?
No, because they sort of did, but let's just say some of the singers were, and then they admit it in the documentary, were kind of slightly intimidated.
Yeah.
Facing, you know, all these people.
Yeah.
And it took them longer to get to. But my point is, I swear to God, that had to have been auto pitch corrected, some of the performances.
Right.
Because when they show the takes, it's like, whoa. It's a little bit spicy.
How did you do it in 1980 something?
I don't know.
I think you very speeded it.
You very sped certain bits. That's what I heard.
Because no one's going to be way off, obviously. Anything that's going to need a little tweak.
Yeah, if you need a little tweak. Or does the fact of like compression, EQ, probably a bit of like, probably a bit of chorus widening, does that just forgive
I think a big chorus will definitely smooth some stuff out.
Yeah.
I don't think Stevie would have had a problem with that. Stevie did not have a problem. Yeah. Sometimes I feel like Stevie already has auto-tune built into his esophagus.
Yeah, it's
mental. He's bored with auto-tune.
It's like, it's fucking mental, like how good he is. Anyway, so it's worth, I definitely, but even if you don't like the song, which, you know, most people with ears won't.
It's not really about the song.
It's not really about, it's more about the like, I mean, if I was doing a sort of recording degree, I'd be like, watch this.
Okay, right.
In terms of
ego management
and just keeping a session going. And
it's
pretty inspirational, actually, from that point of view.
I like that. Yeah, that concept of, well, concept isn't the right word, but like performing, bounced artists performing to each other. It's a really interesting kind of, as you say, it brings up the A game, but also like it's gonna keep the egos in check as well, because it's kind of they're sharing. It's like no one's kind of got, we'll do it together, you know? So then no one's feeling like somebody's more important than someone else. Whereas if you were doing, okay, right, Michael's in this morning, 1 till 3. And then
exactly.
I'm using the 80s timekeeping system there, where the morning starts at 1 p.m. apparently. I don't know where I got that from.
It does in LA. Yeah,
it does in LA, exactly. Yeah, but you know, they're going to be thinking of who's coming up next, who's in the booth, who's in after me, and that's going to fuck with the psychology of the performance. Where it's like, we're all here, we're all. It's all a good cause. That's how Quincy talks, isn't it?
Yeah, I also...
It's like everyone had a cup of tea.
He's not in a Guy Ritchie film, Dan. Quincy Jones here. Quincy Jones.
Yeah, right. Listen here, ilk.
I was thinking, like, what's the mixed equivalent of that? Imagine you had a room, right? A big room. And there's like... there's like 10 consoles in a circle, right? And everyone's working on headphones, and every hour you've got to play to the rest of the group what you're doing, where you're at.
That's a bit like being back at SAE for me, to be honest.
Yeah.
Except the material is terrible. The console, the little Behringer console. I remember that's giving me weird flashbacks. I don't want to think.
Can you explain
that?
What SAE is, Dan, to anyone?
The School of Audio Engineering. Who is today's sponsor?
Is it still there?
Yeah. On the King's
Road. And then one of them isn't there. Is it Alchemaire's one?
Yeah, we don't talk about Alchemaire.
Okay.
Well, actually, apparently Alchemaire on the whole was quite well regarded, but it closed down quite quickly.
Yeah.
For reasons we won't get into. But how it went, yeah. What I thought you were going to say about the room full of people on a console is, I thought you were talking about how on an old board, if you wanted to do automation before there was any automation,
yes,
you had to really perform the mix on the faders,
yeah,
and have a kind of a literal team, like a team effort to make it, to put it all together. And I think that often involved the artists. I feel like,
yeah,
like Bohemian Rhapsody, for example, I think took sort of
40
takes to get the. I've heard as well.
I've heard as well that what producers would do is that they would say, right, if there's a, say it's Queen, it's like, right, drums, you're in charge of the lead vocal level. Freddie, you're doing the drum level. You know, John Deacon's doing guitars and whatever.
Yeah.
Otherwise,
John Deacon's in charge of slightly too tight PE shorts.
You're obsessed with John Deacon's shorts. Can I just say this? Whenever we talk about Queen, Dan always, like without fail, goes, oh yeah, John Deacon shorts in 86, Wembley 86, he's wearing very tight shorts.
I just find it a strange choice. You know,
they were very tight shorts.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, everyone's wearing tight stuff there, but it's just the sort of, what's Freddie wearing today? Okay, right, a series of extraordinary outfits. Okay, I brought with me. What's in the bottom of my backpack? Oh, okay, I just went for a run this morning. I know, I'll just put these shorts on.
They look like his PE shorts from year.
Exactly.
Year 10.
You know what I mean? That's the point. Oh, sorry. Back to give John Deacon the guitars. Yeah.
So you give the bandmates whatever each band member is mixing or is in charge of the level of whatever instrument they don't play.
Yeah.
Because if you gave them their instruments, everything would just be turned up.
Everything's just...
Which I think that's a really interesting.
Yeah.
I would like to make a record where there's a board like that. Mm-hmm. And I've never got anywhere near it. I've played on records that have been mixed like that.
Yeah.
I haven't been there for the mix. I just played drums.
I think we did it on the Trident when the faders were less scratchy and old.
Did we?
On Laura's album.
I don't remember them.
I want to say I Feel Your Love.
Didn't we?
And I think we just sort of bust it onto the board and then we just said, Laura, here you go. And she also had a mix credit on, to be honest. But I think she did the fader rides and we did like a couple of performances.
I think I remember doing that.
I'm fairly certain. Well, okay. I just got this memory in my head because I think that's the only time when it wasn't just push the faders to unity and try not to touch them because they go all a bit scratchy. Which is what that old Trident's a bit like now.
Yeah. Okay, I don't really have a memory of that.
Yeah. But when you were at Angelic last week, was the board in the way? Or like I imagine at some points it would have felt like it was, and other points maybe it wasn't. Like,
was it in the way, like physically in the way, or
either in the abstract or
the room was pretty big. So it didn't, and it's a pretty big SSL. It's like 48 channels. It's a big bastard. Interestingly, they had the drums spread across the board.
Yeah.
So say SSL 1 and 2 was coming from Pro Tools was whatever was the session.
Yeah.
And then the, you know, kick snare rooms were on the board and they were
in motion.
Which is interesting.
Sorry, obvious question. Was it just drum recording?
It was drum recording. Yeah, okay.
So you sort of had backing track on 1 and 2 and then everything was actually being recorded. It was spread out on the board.
Backing track. Yeah, exactly. Backing track on 1 and 2 and then the drums sort of coming out of the SSL.
Yeah.
Which is it, because we used to work like that when we first had the Trident, I remember. When we were tracking bands, we'd sort of spread it across the board.
And then I moved away from that.
It's a pain in the ass.
Yeah, because
if you're flicking, going from song to song.
Yeah, I guess, I don't know how many songs you were doing a day, but...
Like 5 a day. I did, I did like 12, 13 tracks over 2 days. It was a lot of recording. Yeah. Do you know what else was interesting? Just how, I know we've spoken about this before. I've got the same drum kit I've had for like 20 years.
Yeah.
I swap out snares and cymbals and stuff, but essentially the Heyman kit is...
Which is featured on the Drums for Song sample pack.
Yes, it is. I mean, it's really, it honestly done 90% of everything I've done.
Yeah.
So I really know that kit. It's when you take it into a different room, God, it sounds different.
Right.
And they put me in a sort of drumbrella situation.
Okay.
So I'm in a booth. They built a booth in the room with a really quite low ceiling.
Have they got one
canopy.
Of those things on a winch?
No, it's not as posh as that. But it was just like they built a thing out of, what do you call them, baffles.
Baffles, yeah.
Put the drums in, and then there's a very, very, very heavy piece of material over the top of that that's quite low.
Yeah.
And then there's the room.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, I mean, dry. Drier than our booth, Dan. Because I know in our booth we've got a window.
Yeah. I know what you mean. Our booth is
pretty dry. But it's not
absolutely ridiculously dry.
This was... But also, it's not just, it's not like I say, so when you put drums in different rooms, the drums really just behave so differently. And this was just really dry.
Yeah.
And quite boomy from my drumming position.
Okay, yeah. So not what you were hearing in the cans.
No.
But yeah.
Just had a lot of low end in there.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever. It was just nice. It was nice. But I was thinking, God. And my drums were like 70s vibed.
Yeah, tight. Okay.
There's right. like no ring happening anywhere. So there's no ring in the room. Yeah. There's no ring on the drums.
Yeah.
God, they were hard to play.
Right.
Not hard to play. Yeah, hard's the wrong word. Just, you're not getting away with anything.
Okay.
The room, everything's super dry. And the room is dry. Any slight ghost note you do, is just there.
So the sort of the sensitivity is amplified.
Yeah, because if you're in a room and you've got like a bonhomie, sort of everything's tuned quite tightly.
Yeah.
You're in a big room. Christ is more forgiving.
Interesting, yeah.
Yeah, and I don't know why the dryness of it. Maybe it's because I'm sort of used to the dryness of our booth, and I'm used to the dryness of my room, which is pretty dry. I don't know. This it really sounded. I'm probably not articulating very well. It really sounded different.
Different. I can see why it would seem drier in the middle of a room, actually, because a booth, any small space, it's got mass in the walls, so that will bounce kind of lows and mids back at you.
Yeah.
And it's going to have kind of resonances which are going to be in the sort of warmer spots, whereas like if you're actually in an open space, it's a bit like level Love Will Tear Us Apart, Joy Division.
Yeah.
Didn't they record some of the drums on the roof?
I don't know.
Have you not heard this? I'm sure it's, what is it, 24 Hour Party People?
I haven't seen it.
Have you not? Isn't that about the sort of the Manchester scene?
Yeah, I've not seen it.
It's a good film. Steve Coogan.
Yeah. I've always wanted to record drums outside.
Yeah.
Just to see what that's like.
We should, I think it is incredibly dry.
What, right?
And
unless you're by a wall or something.
Yeah.
If you're by a brick wall.
Yeah.
Then you're gonna.
But if you think about the Beatles concert on the roof as well, that's, I mean, it's hard to know with the Beatles, because it's quite a lot of dry drums on the go anyway.
Yeah, because, that was also Abbey Road period, wasn't it? Where the drums were kind of close mic'd and dry.
Yeah. Yeah. Road / on the roof of Apple Core headquarters.
Let's record. Where could we? No, there's nowhere to it. I guess it'd be really weather dependent.
Yeah.
Should we do it?
Where could we? I'm just looking at. We're both staring out into Hackney Wick now. Just thinking, like, where
That's
could
an
you?
Ideal space to record drums.
I think you could do it round here. You just need not
where,
very
where?
Long. Because it's
before the council arrive.
In Hackney Wick, I don't think anyone's gonna have any issues there. I guess we could hop the fence into that empty yard there, but it's still the fence.
There's still a fence, and
the acoustics in there are quite interesting.
Well, I guess where we're looking, listeners, is sort of empty yard with quite high walls. So you get,
I think there's going to be
some slappy things.
Yeah, I want to know what that yard sounds like now.
Let's
get some speakers over the fence and just try and record an impulse response of the yard.
Yeah. Dan, you got plug in of the week?
Plug in of the week.
There's 56 seconds left, so you better hurry up.
I don't think I've plug in of the week. But you know what I did try the other day? A cursory pass on RipX.
What's that?
You use that? RipX is the... I'm sure they claim to be the world's... Certainly, it's a new DAW, but it's got AI separation built into it. And it's quite interesting, because it's like the AI separators I've used previously, you just chuck it into a website and it throws you stems back.
Yes.
RipX will... It will do the separation, and then it will draw the things that have been separated in the DAW and also works out what the notes are and all kinds of weird and wacky things. I mean, it like it's a new...
Have you tried it?
I have tried it. Just kind of, I think the trial is like, there's like a free 21-day trial.
Is it, so it's going to be subscription as everything is now, right?
No, it's just 100 quid or 200 quid depending on the tier.
Wow.
I mean, I've got to be honest, it felt quite janky when I was using it. But then I wasn't trying to stay in the DAW. I wanted to put stuff in.
Yeah.
And then, because it was something that had been, it was like a demo which had been done into a laptop.
Yes.
So the voice and the guitar was baked in together. And it, you know, when it's just sort of like, you're like, oh, that's such a good take. And you're like,
yeah.
Let's not even bother retaking that because it's just, that's just the thing. But obviously it's nice to be able to get a little bit, you know, get some compression on the vocal and separate it out from the guitar.
Yeah. Dan, do you think AI is ever going to get that good that labels won't need stems? You just send them the two track and they, there's an app. I just dropped my phone.
It's just dropped his phone. Well, let me answer that.
There's an algorithm that just splits, like this thing Andrew Sheps has, but it just works as a piece of AI.
What does Andrew Sheps have?
He's got this bouncing...
Oh, Bounce Butler.
Yeah, bouncing plugin that...
Who are this week's sponsor? No.
I've not tried it. I heard him talking about it. It sounds great. I think it takes a while to set up.
That's an automation tool, isn't it?
But once you're done,
yeah,
at the end of the night, you sort of press, give me stems, and it stems everything.
I mean, that's the sort of thing, you know, I'm sure Andrew Sheps has got a great product, but sort of ought to be built into all DAWs at this point, you know?
Well, that would be nice.
Make me, you know, whatever, you just label up your tracks and you go, run me stems, please.
Send to Universal.
Send to, and it automatically, and then it logs into Uniport and does the invoice for you as well. Perfect. Avid, Apple, Ableton.
Get together.
There's Steinberg. Yeah, the universal Uniport plugin.
Yeah, oh, that would be nice.
To answer your question, yeah, probably. Stem separation. At the moment, it does almost all that is useful anyway. Like, there's a few things that are a bit wrong, but, you know, if you need to get, say you've got a messy recording that's just through a phone or a laptop and you want to get some compression on the vocals, it will separate it enough that there's kind of like 2% left over from little bits of vocal left in the guitar stem. And
yeah.
And it's kind of like, unless you want to actually separate them, as in take them away from each other, you can do everything you need to it.
So
that's what's useful. But I think stems always maybe have their place.
Maybe. Well, we'll find out as we go into the future.
Yeah.
We've run out
Speaking
of time.
Speaking of the future, what's going on this week?
I'm in another bloody studio this week.
I was going to another studio.
I'm going to Livingston. I'll report back.
Report back from Livingston.
I'm here. I'm here Thursday, Friday.
Marvellous.
Back home. What are you doing, Dan?
I've got a mix tomorrow. And I've got choir session recording on Wednesday. And then we have one of our regular clients back in Studio A, I believe.
I believe. I'm on the email, Dan.
I believe.
You don't have to tell me. Dan, have a great week. Happy music making, everybody.
Happy music making.
Bye.
Bye.